Welcome to the Research Data Alliance Data Streams podcast series, a place where researchers, scientists, and data professionals share their experiences of working together in the global Research Data Alliance community to address and solve the challenges of sharing and managing research data. My name is Stephanie Hagstrom, and I'm the Director of Community Development at the RDA US and the host of this podcast series. Today, we will hear from members of the Life Science Infrastructure Interest Group, which grew from the Elixir RDA Bridging Force Interest Group, about what their motivation was to start this group, what challenges and potential impacts they will address, what outputs they have planned, and how you can get involved. I'm joined by the co-chairs of the group, Susan Grigorik, the Associate Director for Data Science at the National Institutes of Health in the United States, Jeff Christensen, the Deputy Director at the Australian Biocommons in Australia, Alicia Wood Charlson, the Scientific Community Engagement Lead for the U.S. Department of Energy's Systems Biology Knowledge Base, aka KBase, in the United States, and Walburg Nyberg Ackerstrom, a bioinformatician at the Department of Cell and Molecular Biology at NBIS National Bioinformatics Infrastructure Sweden in Sweden. Thank you all for participating in this podcast today. I will now turn the microphone over to Susan, who will be moderating this podcast. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. We are delighted to talk about life science infrastructure, a topic that is a passion for myself and my co-chairs on the Life Science Infrastructure Interest Group. And we recognize that research infrastructure landscape is broad and is diverse. Our goals for our Life Science Infrastructure Interest Group are to explore the types of digital assets that could be anything that exists in binary, data images, model software, you get the drift. So data assets management challenges that exist in life science data infrastructures at various stages of the research data lifecycle. And we are trying to solve this on behalf of the different types of users of our infrastructures. We goal to understand life science data infrastructures and how they are trying to solve these challenges, how to evaluate these solutions and support fair, findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable principles with respect to the various types of digital assets, and how to synthesize and share out best practices and recommendations for infrastructures to better support fair digital data assets across the life science landscape and around the life research data lifecycle. The first question that I'm going to pose to my colleagues in the group is what are some of the challenges that we all face in managing and providing state-of-the-art data infrastructures to a broad and diverse user base? Jeff, can you tell us a little bit about the Australian Biodata Commons?
Thanks, Susan. Thanks for introducing the group as well as summarizing our focus. So my name is Jeff Christensen and I'm the Deputy Director of the Australian Biocommons, and we're a federally funded effort here in Australia that kicked off in 2019. And our aim is to establish a more fit for purpose data and tools ecosystem that better supports life science research. As you mentioned, we're aiming to empower a very broad and diverse user base. And in the Biocommons, we have a really strong user engagement focus, and we routinely canvass the Australian life science researcher community about the challenges that they're facing on a day-to-day basis. So we know that as life science has become more data-focused, we need to better support both those researchers who have limited data science coding or computational skills, but we also need to support people who are expert in these areas and everyone in between. So this means we need to provide a variety of options that satisfy these different types of users. So this might include avenues for accessing data and tools just through a web browser. So people can just, you know, with few coding skills can just log in and start working. We also, those systems need to be able to upload data and they have to have sufficient computational power that sit under the hood. But we also need to support and make sure we support users that are more tech savvy. So these are things such as libraries of software containers or optimized tools and workflows, which can be installed on a really wide variety of computational systems. And depending on a particular researcher, those resources might be high performance or HPC computers that are providing nationally. They could be provided by an institution, or they could be provided locally. Systems that people also use are cloud-based platforms. So some examples of that are Nectar, which is our national research cloud here in Australia, or commercial solutions like Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud, or Microsoft Azure. So All this complexity really means we spend a lot of time thinking about portability and reusability of data and tools across all these types of infrastructures, so researchers can spend more of their valuable time doing research and not managing the computational infrastructure itself. In Australia, we're really lucky that we've been able to develop very close working relationships with all of the national research computing providers in Australia. So we've been able to collectively form a holistic vision of what we need to support life science research and coordinate our work, and really have a unified approach that's being able to empower a wide variety of researchers, no matter where they're physically based or which resources they may have access to. In addition to establishing resources that can help users across that IT skills spectrum, we also have a remit to support researchers across different focus areas of life science, so from environmental, agricultural, and human research. While some infrastructure can be utilized across all these areas, there usually does need to be specific systems provided that speak the language of each group and also respects any domain-specific requirements. For example, whenever human-derived data is used in research, any infrastructure and associated processes absolutely need to align with legislative and ethics requirements and operate with a heightened data security in mind. So that's us. Alicia, what challenges are KBase focusing on?
Jeff, thanks for that great overview on the breadth and depth of the research communities that life sciences infrastructures have to support. My name is Alicia Wood Charlson, and I'm the user engagement lead for the systems biology database called KBase, which is funded by the U.S. Department of Energy. The U.S. Department of Energy actually funds several life science infrastructure projects in addition to KBase. These include the Joint Genome Institute, or the JGI, and the Environmental Molecular Sciences Laboratory, aka EMSL. These two projects provide services and resources to a broader research community, including data generation. They accept physical biological samples from the community and convert those samples into data, often for free, usually through a competitive project proposal call. Between the JGI and EMSL user facilities, the U.S. Department of Energy supports a wide array of life science data types, from genome sequencing to environmental chemistry to synthetic biology, all with robust sample to data tracking and quality control measures. The Department of Energy also supports the National Microbiome Data Collaborative, otherwise known as the NMDC. The NMDC is working to ensure that samples and data are connected back to the environmental context in which they came from, either at the time of collection or during the experiment. This we call sample metadata. The NMDC also takes a variety of sequence and chemistry-based data types and processes them through standardized workflows, which ensures that the data products being made available to the community are more directly comparable, in contrast to pulling published data products that have been processed through different analysis pipelines. KBase is actually downstream of all those infrastructures. We provide a free open source graphical user interface, access to a variety of public data sources, including those that are funded by the Department of Energy. And we allow anyone, we have a pretty global research community, to upload data, run complex bioinformatic pipelines of your own creation on your data combined with public data, and then release those reproducible analysis results with a digital object identifier, or DOI, that can be used in a publication. Many of the major challenges faced by Department of Energy life science infrastructures include keeping up to date with software and hardware advancements and ensuring the community has access to the most recent data or analysis tools that are generated as the field moves forward. Also, supporting the ever-increasing compute and storage requirements as new tools are generated to deal with larger data sets. And then finally, to reach and train the 27,000 plus KBase users or the 10,000 a year downloads that happen from the JGI data portals on how to do open science, best practices in data citations, and of course, general data management and the FAIR data principles. With that, I'll hand it over to Volmar.
Thank you, Alicia. My name is Volmar Nyberg Åkerström, and I, in this context, represent the distributed infrastructure for life science data in Europe. The infrastructure is called Elixir, and before I basically echo the sentiments that Jeff and Alicia just expressed, I would like to give some context. So to start, Elixir has been an intergovernmental organization since 2013, and today consists of 22 member states forming a network of somewhere around 220 research organizations. There is a central hub for coordinating Elixir-wide activities and national nodes for supporting local communities and coordinating contributions from each of the member states. I work as a data steward at the Swedish national node, or simply Elixir Sweden. The node is coordinated by the National Bioinformatics Infrastructure Sweden, and we contribute to activities across Elixir's technical platforms, the services, user communities, and projects. As a node, we also form a bridge to national life science research communities and also to regional infrastructures. And I would also like to say that we face similar challenges that Jeff and Alicia just described. And Elixir was formed to both manage and safeguard data generated by public funds. The volumes of those data, they are ever increasing, and it's been a challenge for quite a while. We see a range of challenges in coordination, integration, and sustainability of these bioinformatics resources that we supply and also contribute to develop. And this is across all of the member states. And addressing the challenges is important to make sure that the services that the users are depending on are available in the long term. So essentially, Elixir exists to make it easier for scientists across of Europe to find and to share data, exchange expertise, and to agree on common best practices. And in order to do this, we need to work together on a global scale.
Thank you. Although each of us is developing unique infrastructures, it seems like we all face similar challenges. I wonder if we could each talk about current activities and goals that our infrastructure is doing that align with the FAIR principles, and how your activities will build on prior work from the RDA community. Jeff, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Thanks, Susan. Well, as I mentioned earlier, one current focus of our efforts in Australia is ensuring that one form of digital asset, and that is computational workflows, are more able to be deployed and reused across a really wide variety of different computational systems. This is required because a lot of time and effort goes into developing these very complex workflows, and reusing them whenever possible makes a lot of sense. Another driver for portability of workflows is that different researchers have access to all resource allocations on different computational systems. So enabling the workflows to work across a variety of systems makes a lot of sense. So there's two main ways we're moving forward in this space. And the first is to provide a capability that allows workflows that have been optimized on particular computing setups and are available to reuse, to enable those to be made more findable by others, and that is the F in FAIR. So our approach has not been to reinvent the wheel and build a new system here in Australia, but rather to work with our colleagues in Europe at Elixir, that Volmar just mentioned, to utilize a global workflow hub registry that's been established through Elixir and the European Open Science Cloud, or EOSC Life project. Workflow Hub is a publicly accessible and findable registry of computational workflows for life science. It can include really rich information about each workflow. For example, descriptions of what the workflow does and images of showing that pictorially, the required inputs, the component tools, and the expected outputs, as well as what workflow language was used. So workflow descriptions that are submitted to Workflow Hub are assigned a DOI, or a digital object identifier, and they also include instructions on how to cite their use. So that all enables the creators to get of those workflows to get credit for their work in building the workflow in the first place. So we started working with several key partners across Australia last year to begin to create a collection of workflows in Workflow Hub that have been installed and optimized on quite a wide variety of Australian computational systems. And as of last week, I checked, there were 41 workflows described in Workflow, and several of these have already been found, reused, and cited by other researchers, which is fantastic. So the number of workflows described in Workflow Hub continues to grow as we spread the word amongst Australian researchers using computational workflows in their day-to-day work, which is fantastic. Another piece of infrastructure that we're building to better support workflow accessibility and reusability in Australia, and that is the A and the R in FAIR, is to establish a national Nextflow deployment service. So in some of our community consultations that we've undertaken, Nextflow is the workflow language that's emerging as a standard for defining bioinformatics pipelines. There's a system called Nextflow Tower that can support researchers wanting to use Nextflow bioinformatics pipelines across a wide range of on-premise supercomputing or commercial cloud platforms. It's called Tower. And through a license agreement with Sakera Labs to use Tower, we're currently in the process of standing up a national Nextflow workflow deployment service. So this is going to offer a centralized command post for launching Nextflow pipelines across lots of different computational systems across Australia and also beyond. So currently the service is being refined with the support of a few pilot research communities, and further engagement with additional communities will mature the service and will be the focus in coming months. Okay, now I'll hand over the mic to Alicia.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Alicia with KBase again. And yeah, KBase and the National Microbiome Data Collaborative also do a lot in the reproducible workflow space. KBase is currently focusing efforts around getting users' DOIs for data in the workflows containing them and encouraging them to use the dataset / workflow DOI in the publication so that the broader publishing infrastructure can link across digital assets and so that the researchers get credit for all parts of their work. We also track the provenance of all data objects inside KBase and will soon begin to report data reuse to DataCite for any data object that has a DOI. The goal for this is to demonstrate the impact of sharing data so that the community sees data as a first-class research object. The long game here is for researchers to get recognition for sharing digital assets, not just their publications, during the job search or when they go up for promotion review. We recently published a 10 Simple Rules article called Getting and Giving Credit for Data in PLOS Computational Biology that kind of goes into more details and describes the process better if anyone is interested. The main goal is to really incentivize and reward researchers when they do the extra work that is required to make digital assets fair. That goal is supported by and already leverages many of the existing efforts in RDA around samples, around data, around software, and of course, publishing. To ensure that we're practicing the FAIR principles and open science on our end, KBase, JGI, and NMBC all support user DOIs. We work to make data public and data sharing easier, provide clear Creative Commons licensing where appropriate, and the code behind NMBC and KBase are all open source and available on GitHub. And I know Volmar has more to say on this.
All right. Thank you, Alicia and Jeff. It's Volmar here again.
I would argue that some of the aspects of FAIR are always at the core of what we do as data infrastructures. So as an organization, for example, Elixir has a long standing, and I would say mutual exchange with the RDA. So long before I joined, I know that Elixir was already represented at the workshop where the FAIR principles were conceptualized in 2014. And after that, these emerging principles were on the agenda for the RDA Elixir Bridging Force, as it was called at that time, and presented at the plenary following in the same year. And a few colleagues who organized that session then contributed to the 2016 publication, The FAIR Guiding Principles for Research Data. So RDA is recognized in Elixir's international strategy, and we have a long history of a rewarding collaboration. Some of those focus on technologies that cut across all disciplines, and other are more domain specific. And that also reflects the reality that we see when implementing FAIR. Some aspects cut across, while others, they are domain-specific adaptations. And in Elixir, we have a focus group dedicated to RDA activities that have been reporting from the plenaries since 2014. The FAIR Sharing Registry is a good example. It's a resource that have developed and matured with the RDA community since the third plenary, I think. And today, it's a curated registry of standards, data repositories, and policies that cut across all disciplines. The FAIR Sharing Registry is also one of the recommended interoperability resources of the Elixir's interoperability platform. Another good example is the FAIR for Research Software recommendation. It addresses some of the aspects of FAIR specific to sharing software, and it's been stated that all Elixir infrastructure should strive for research outputs that include software that meets the standards of the FAIR principles. So more concretely, Elixir's tools platform is currently engaged in promoting software development best practices through training and also something we call software management plans. And both of these are supported by the RDA recommendation on FAIR for research software.
Thank you so much. I love that each of us is considering how the FAIR principles are important to life science infrastructure, just as a FAIR is a guiding principle for the data held within our infrastructures. Jeff, what do you think would be an outcome and impact of the activities of our interest group?
Thanks, Susan. Well, as I'm here representing researchers based in Australia, I think it's probably just worth reflecting on what data held within the infrastructures actually means for a minute. The reality is that most of the core global data resources and associated data infrastructures are actually geographically located in Europe, the USA, and to a lesser extent, Asia. And all of these resources are physically a very long way from Australia. Even though Australia is a rich nation and we do have excellent telco networks in place to support research, this fact still presents some really significant challenges when we think about moving large amounts of data around the globe to and from various data repositories or to collaborators that may be based anywhere around the world. And I'm pretty sure that researchers in many other areas of the world outside Europe or North America face similar challenges to the ones we do. So research is really a global collaborative endeavor. And in my mind, forming a global network of life science data infrastructures where we can all learn from one another is an excellent starting point. And, you know, this group forming and us meeting has already been a really great first outcome from my perspective. As we're just starting out with this interest group, we still have a long way to go to attract more global representation to the group. So it's going to be critical that we can do that. I think Volmar mentioned earlier that, you know, our infrastructures really, we all exist solely to support life science researchers. So if we can collectively work towards the development of a more globally interconnected ecosystem of all of our infrastructures that can support collaborative research, that's where the real impacts will be felt. Alicia, what outcomes and impacts would you like to see come out of this group?
Thanks, Jeff. And to be honest, I think I'd just say yes and. One of the main outcomes from this group, I think, in the near term is hopefully to ensure interoperability of data assets between our infrastructure, digital assets between our infrastructures, as you mentioned. Related to that, I also think that, you know, including our other collaborators on the interest group, we're representation across four continents. And so I think it positions this group to really consider what it would take to ensure that the life science infrastructures and the digital assets that we support are fair for everyone, not just those in the countries where the majority of the resources exist. And that really means, I think, understanding what access looks like beyond our borders. Are there language barriers? Are there hardware limitations? Or even just connection issues? First, you know, a goal, of course, is to just understand what fair looks like for infrastructure in general. And I think we've got a good start on that. Volmar, what about you?
Of course. And once again, I can only agree.
I'm looking forward to this interest group as an opportunity. So to learn more about what we have in common as data infrastructures, where life science data infrastructures distinguish themselves from other disciplines, and how we can work together to make our contribution as impactful as possible. And by that, I mean impactful both to the RDA community and also to our respective infrastructures. So in the long term, I would like to see us share success stories from adopting recommendations from the RDA, for example, propose working groups to address new challenges that we identify, and submit many more joint sessions to delve deep into some of these issues related to how we can support researchers in the best possible way. I mean, today we are facing a transition towards an increasingly data-driven research practice. And I really look forward to working together with all of you.
Fantastic. This has been a lot of fun. Jeff, can you tell our listeners to this podcast how they can get involved? What's a good way to engage with this group and its work?
Thanks again, Susan. So there's a couple of ways to join in the discussion. And of course, everyone is welcome. So firstly, our interest group aims to hold regular sessions at various RDA plenaries. So coming along to an RDA plenary and joining us there is an excellent first step. We are jointly hosting a session with the Fair Sharing Working Group at the 20th plenary in Gothenburg in March 2023. That's entitled Infrastructure Supporting the Fair Data Principles in Life Science Research Practice. So several of us will be present in Sweden. We'd love to meet and talk more there. And online attendees are also very welcome. If anyone is listening who isn't able to attend that plenary, they're still very welcome to join our group. So we've been meeting up semi-regularly outside the official RDA events. They've been really fantastic meetings. I have to apologize in advance, though, that we're a global group. So sometimes the time zones aren't great and it could be, you know, the meeting could be at a little bit of an unsociable hour for you. But we have really great discussions at those meetings. If people want to officially join up to the group, it's easy. So firstly, sign up to the Research Data Alliance. That's free for individual members. And after that, visit our groups page on the RDA website, and that's the Life Science Data Infrastructures IG or interest group page, and just select the join group option. We also have a group email listed on that page, and we'd be really happy to hear from anyone who's keen to join us. Thanks, Susan.
Thanks so much. Well, I think that's all for us today. I want to thank my colleagues, Jeff, Alicia, and Walmart, for joining. It's great to learn a little bit more about your data infrastructures. And Stephanie, thank you for the opportunity to present the Life Science Data Infrastructure Interest Group. We hope that our listeners will join us as we explore best practices and recommendations to support fair data infrastructures and the data lifecycle. Thanks, everyone, for these great conversations, for sharing your valuable insights, stories, and experiences. Back over to you, Stephanie.
Thank you so much, Susan. And thanks, Jeff, Alicia, Walmer. Really appreciate you being here today. We certainly do recognize and thank you all for the enormous contributions and commitment that you give to this community. I want to thank all the listeners for joining our podcast, and please visit the RDA website at rde-alliance.org to join the community. Thanks for listening.
The Data Streams podcast series is hosted by the Research Data Alliance U.S. region and funded by the U.S. National Science Foundation. Upbeat Theme Loop, created by Mirth Nerona, is used under a Creative Commons license. For more information about the group or outputs discussed on today's podcast, or to listen to other episodes, find us at rd-alliance.org/podcast or on the Research Data Alliance's YouTube channel. Thanks for listening.